You have to lay some groundwork here. In terrorism, between 1941 and 1945, 530 prisoners gave over 2,400 lectures on every conceivable subject. In addition to that, there were over 1,000 concerts. They were ready for a pinnacle work. That's really what it came out of. It came out of the need to make a grand, important political statement, their way of fighting back, but that was as a result of the fact that they could do this. He had confidence that they could do it because the groundwork had been laid. It's like in a community that's just getting its arts community organized. You know, at what point do you change over from, in the visual arts, from the clowns on velvet with big eyes to Jackson Pollock? I mean, at what point do you really become an artistic society? And in fact, in Terezin, they became one of the most active artistic societies in World War II because of everything that was going on. So he did the first performance. That was not easy because he only had one piano vocal score, so he had to do everything by rote, the men one night, the women one night. He had a little harmonium, and he just pounded out parts. But one thing which we do say in this performance script that was absolutely clear, and it became clear to me from everybody that I know. I now know four people who were in the chorus, and they all say the same thing. When he recruited singers, when he did anything, when he did chamber music, when he did accompanying solo singers, when he did some Tosca, when he did Bartered Bride, he did 38 performances of Bartered Bride in the camp, 38. But every time he recruited, he did so with a wink, a smile, a sunny disposition. When he began to work on the Requiem, the survivors tell us that he was like a crazed man on a mission. You couldn't whisper, you couldn't talk, you couldn't question. It was an act of not so much desperation, but passion to the point where the level had risen dramatically, and he would not accept anything other than their very best. He recognized that they were sick, he recognized that they were hungry, he recognized that singers were in and out. He also recognized that when they left the basement where they rehearsed, sometimes they had to walk over bodies that weren't there 3 hours ago when they started the rehearsal. This is the atmosphere in which this incredible, productive, and ingenious, and inspiring artistic society flourished under the Nazis. And it was something they had to do. They couldn't stop themselves, that's all. They couldn't stop themselves. They just had to do this because here is the way they found their dignity and self-respect. Many of them said, we were imprisoned, but we were not prisoners. There was barbed wire out there, but as long as we did things like this, as long as we went to lectures, as long as we did chamber music, as long as there was cabaret, as long as there were Shakespeare recitations, we were free. And the lectures, I mean, Leo Beck, this extraordinary rabbi, writes that, who do they lecture on? Maimonides, Descartes, Aristotle, Beethoven. In addition to performances, it was the exploration by the minds who were there, who had the capacity, and they needed to teach, and the others needed to hear. And so this was the atmosphere from 1941 to liberation in 1945 that I think forms the legacy of Terezin.
I mean, in a way, it's like a Chautauqua from heaven in hell.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. Leo Beck writes that before the performances and lectures were sanctioned by the Nazis, they were done sub rosa in barracks and in attics that they found. And he writes very clearly that when they stood around and listened to the speaker, for that hour, they were free. That really, they were transported. That they could envision themselves in the life they had before having been arrested.